What is up, Laurier? This is your radio, your favorite radio host, Rajni and Jeffrey, with Radio Laurier News at Noon. Today we'll be discussing some Ontario news, global news, as well as just general news for the Laurier community. So stay tuned, and we hope you enjoy the show.
How's it going, everybody? I hope everyone's doing great today. It's February 1st at the time of this recording. And I thought we should start the show today, Rajni, with some news about Ontario schools.
Yep.
So students in teacher education programs, so university students in teacher education programs, can now officially be hired for supply teaching positions in Ontario schools.
Oh.
Yeah. So cool. The province will now allow university students in teacher education programs to fill in at Ontario schools that are seeing teacher shortages, pardon me, because of the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
So yeah, this new change is basically just because in certain parts of the province, I guess they're having a shortage because I guess teachers will catch COVID or their family members, whatever. So this is quite interesting, actually. So eligible educators from outside Ontario will also be able to apply for temporary certificates, which will expire December 31st next year, or the end of this year, sorry, 2021. So, and then, I don't know, I think this is kind of interesting. I mean, imagine this scenario, like, before COVID, how crazy it would be to think that they'd be giving university students supply teaching jobs.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, it just shows that COVID just turned everything completely upside down.
Yeah, like this. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say, I can imagine how nervous the student teachers might be. Because this is like, they're being thrown headfirst into the deep end, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, on the other side, though, I feel like this was going to be a great opportunity, probably for a couple people.
Yeah.
Like, a really, really good opportunity. But I feel like there's also probably going to be a few people who get the certificate that probably shouldn't have got the certificate.
Oh, true.
You know, just like, I don't know. I'm sure they have some strict programming about how they hand out the certificates.
Yeah. But
I'm sure there's going to be some bureaucratic mix-up at some point.
At the end of the day, though, I think teaching is one of those things where you have to, once you're thrown into the deep end, you'll just get the hang of it. And you can work out the kinks later.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm just so interested. Imagine being like 22, 23.
Yeah,
teaching high school class, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's like that's really close in age to me. I don't know, I'd feel kind of weird around my students.
Yeah, like I feel like, you know how normally students sort of somewhat disrespect supply teachers just because they kind of know they can get away with it?
Yeah, because it's like, oh, it's not a real teacher, you know?
Yeah, so I'm wondering how this is gonna work with younger supply teachers. Are they gonna, like, students, I guess, I feel like they'd be have less of a temper, maybe, or maybe they'd be more understanding. I don't know. I think this is going to be interesting.
For the students, I think the actual students themselves, the high school students, will be, they'll probably have a more engaging class, because, like, the younger the teacher, they're more, like, in touch they'll be with the youth of today, you know? Because if you were, we were in high school, like, 2-3 years ago, so I feel like we would be able to relate more to students than someone who's, like, 30, you know? I think it could be good, and it could be kind of bad, because the high school students may not respect the teachers because they're like, oh, they're just like my friends, you know? And I feel like that could open the way for lots of boundaries to be broken, or like weird stuff to happen, you know? So.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think personally, from my opinion of being, this is my second year in university, all of my probably the top 10 of my favorite teachers in university and high school were on the younger side.
Yeah.
And probably my top 10 least favorite teachers in university and high school were on the older side.
Oh.
Just to be completely honest, like, obviously that could be coincidence, but I don't think it is.
It's kind of the opposite for me, actually.
Really?
I always, at least, okay, at when I went to high school, student teachers were kind of just like, it was a normal thing for us to have student teachers. And all of the student teachers were not that good. I don't know. Like, all of my favorite teachers who I really liked and who taught the material well were on the older side, like my parents' age or a bit older.
So I mean, yeah.
It just depends.
I guess it would make sense for both sides of the equation, because one side, a younger educator, is going to be more relatable. Yeah. They're going to understand more of the pop culture, more what's going on. But yeah, that being on the other side, an older teacher is going to know way more about the subject itself. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And they'd have more experience in general just teaching students and like managing a class and establishing that respect dynamic.
Yeah, I feel like the younger students might have a harder, or sorry, the younger teachers might have a harder time sort of
definitely
controlling the class, if you kind of get what I'm saying. Like, I feel like it would be harder for them, for people to take them seriously over like a 50-year-old man, you know?
Or exactly. There's an incident in my high school where we had a chemistry teacher and she was like young and chill and cool, and some people cheated in her class, but when she confronted them about it, they were like, oh, like, they were really not apologetic about it, and they were like, they gave the impression that they didn't think she would care because she was young. So I just wonder if things like that would happen if you have like lots of very young teachers, you know, like the discipline would definitely be an issue, I think.
Yeah, I think at this point though, Ontario's in such a crisis mode.
We just need it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we're getting these news reports, like I just told you about the student teachers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this is like probably like the fourth or fifth biggest headline.
Yeah.
In Ontario right now, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Just to give you and the viewers a bit more information on the story. So Ontario also So today during a news conference, Doug Ford announced how he also plans to spend the second tranche of federal funding allocated to the province for the safe reopening of schools. So essentially he's using the second wave of funding.
Yeah.
Specifically to reopening the schools.
Okay.
Which seems to be Ontario's basically their top priority at this point.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I mean, I don't know. How do you really look at it? You know, kids need school. Kids need to be educated.
Mm-hmm. And the kids parents need somewhere to keep their kids.
Exactly. Exactly. But then also, like, how do you open a school right now? You know?
Exactly.
It's crazy. You know,
people say that, like, kids are less likely to get sick or less likely to get seriously sick. They live at home with their parents and sometimes grandparents. And the teachers live at home. And maybe they're taking care of their parents and coming into contact with older people or risky people. So you can never really say that, like, it's safe, you know? I think the best thing we could do is just put in place as many measures as possible to limit the spread.
Yeah, so speaking of one of those measures that they're actually going to implement, the Ford government, so they've also stated that they're trying to introduce a targeted asymptomatic testing system at schools.
Oh, okay.
So they want to be able to process 50,000 asymptomatic tests a week when once they're fully going. And this kind of comes after an estimated 9,000 tests were conducted during a 4-week asymptomatic testing pilot project launched late last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in, I think, 63 different schools in Toronto, Ottawa, Peel, and York.
Oh, wow.
And I think they had 2.5% of the tests in those schools
were positive.
Were positive with asymptomatic results, or sorry, asymptoms, I guess. I don't know.
Asymptomatic carriers.
Yeah, so that's actually a very good, or I think it is a good encouraging sign.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking some steps towards COVID. So shout out to Ford. I know he's not the greatest.
I think he's really been trying his best for the pandemic, at least. Like, I don't agree with everything that he does, especially not what he did with the education and OSAP. But I think for this pandemic, he's done a great job. At least you can tell that he's making the effort.
Yeah, you can't argue. At least, you can tell that every time he makes a press conference, you can just see the stress.
Yeah.
And you can just tell, like, regardless of what he's doing, he's still putting in a lot of work and there's a lot of decisions.
Yeah.
I'm not a Doug Ford supporter by any means, but just on a person-to-person level, I got to give this man credit for something. Yeah,
like, you can tell he's actually invested in taking care of Ontario.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, shout out to Doug. You're doing your best.
Yeah. Okay, now we're going to move on to a bit more global news. So as many of you may have heard, the SEC is looking to investigate the Redditors who pulled the Wall Street Bets incident. So for those of you who don't know, essentially what they did was they bought a large quantity of short sold stocks. So those are stocks that were in companies that weren't doing as well. So one of the main ones was GameStop. And the reason they chose GameStop is because during the pandemic, their business model runs mainly on in-person sales and in-person store operations. So because malls are closed and everyone's in lockdown, they're not doing so well. So their stock was priced quite low. I think it was something, it was in the double digits for a unit of stock. So what the people on Reddit did was they essentially banded together and was like, what if we just bought a lot of this stock and drove the price up? So that's what they did. They just absolutely ate up that stock and held it. So they weren't selling it and lots of people were buying it. So the demand increased and the stock value increased. But it was, from what I've read, it was apparently a very irregular series of increases and decreases. Like, you couldn't track it and you couldn't monitor it. So, of course, that made the Wall Street hedge fund managers very upset, because the way that a short stock works, I saw an analogy that was used to explain it. So imagine you have a library book that you've stolen from, that you're borrowing from the library. Yeah. And it's not yours because it belongs to the library, but you sell it for $10. And you can buy another copy of the book to replace the one that you borrowed from the library. You can buy that copy of the book for $6. So if you sell the library book for $10 and then buy back another one to replace it for $6, you've made a profit of $4. So what hedge fund managers do is buy up stocks and sell them short, and therefore they make a profit. So they pool the stocks, and so they would buy one at one price and then sell it for a higher price, and then does that make sense?
Raji, I'm not even gonna lie, like, that analogy, I've been following the story.
Yeah.
And I literally could not, like, I don't know much about economics or business, like, to be honest. So a lot of these terms, like hedge fund and like liquid, okay, like, even terms, I had no, but the way you just explained it, and yeah, I'm not just doing this because you're my co-host, but it actually made sense. Like, the library book analogy to someone who's not business aficionado, that actually made sense. So
I must say, it's not my original analogy. It's something I saw online when I was researching. Yeah,
yeah. But just so, the way you.
Oh, okay. So I'll start with what a hedge fund is, I guess, since maybe not everyone knows what that is. So essentially, they use pooled funds and they use different strategies to earn active income for their investors. So they're very aggressively managed, and the main goal of it is generating high returns. So generally, they're only accessible to accredited investors, and they don't require as many SEC regulations as other funds. And they're kind of controversial because of the lack of as much regulation versus other investment vehicles. And usually, they're only bought into by high net worth individuals, because I think the average minimum spend on a hedge fund is like $500,000.
Wow.
So your average person is not going to be investing in a hedge fund. And apparently, what the controversy was with hedge funds is that they were very heavily correlated to the economic crashes in 2008.
Interesting.
You can imagine that if someone is buying a stock for a lower price and then selling it and profiting off of that, like, that wouldn't be good for the people who bought the stock off of them afterwards, you know, because then it would drive down the prices. So anyways, this is like, it's like an economic revolution, but on such a meme-y level. You know what I mean? Like, people didn't even do this. The people on Reddit who are doing this, they're just hobbyist traders. They're not investment bankers. They're not hedge fund managers themselves. They're just trading stocks as a hobby.
Yeah. And
the power of that collective action that they decided to do and band together and do, it caused an actual crisis for the hedge fund managers. And so now they're looking to investigate the people who are involved in it. But then at the same time, it's like, that's what they do. That's what the hedge fund managers do. And no yeah. one comes after them when they do it. But when a bunch of regular people do it, it's like a big deal. So the question is, like, why does being rich make it okay to do these things? But if a regular, ordinary middle-class person does it, then it's not.
Yeah, I was just going to say, first of all, this is a huge win for just the people of the world. This is yeah. a huge win. When I first heard this story, I was like, what? Like,
yeah, I was so confused about it.
It's amazing what the internet can do.
Honestly. And
I don't know. Did you hear about, I'm not sure if this is 100% true. I think my roommate told me about this. I think it is true, though. Someone flew a blimp. Like, they paid for a blimp.
Yeah.
To fly around, you know, Robinhood, the trading app that
yeah.
really facilitated this whole scenario.
Yeah.
So they paid for a blimp to, like, fly around Robinhood's headquarters or whatever, and it had like a profane message on it.
Oh my god.
Like, suck my nuts, Robin Hood. And it was just so flying funny. Around it. It was like on the side of the blimp.
Wow.
Cause I think Robin Hood's trying to basically take the side of the hedge fund people.
Robin Hood blocked people from buying GameStop and what was the other one? AMC. Yeah, GameStop and AMC were the two ones that people were trading most. And I think Robin Hood stopped people from buying them.
Really? Do you
last I read, they stopped them from buying it, and I think it's because they didn't want people to be like playing with it anymore, essentially, because they're buying it at very low prices and then holding it, and then that makes the stock price go up because it's like a high demand but less supply. So then they're driving up the prices that way, but it wasn't in any regularized fashion or any trackable pattern. Like, it would go up 300% and then back down again and then up again. And so they just took it down. Robin Hood took it down.
That's just, wow. You know? Yeah. Wow. I don't even.
And then the thing is, I was reading up on it, and it says it's not exactly illegal, because for it to be illegal, people would have to have the intent to, like, dismantle the stock market or, like, to destabilize the stock market. But these people didn't have that intent. They were just doing it for fun. You know, like, it's very hard to prove an intent for this thing, because the whole Reddit was just hobby traders. Like, these are just regular people who are trying to learn about the stock market and share stock tips. So you can't trace it back to any kind of organized plot, you know, which is really hilarious, because it's like the SEC is going to investigate them. And what are they going to find? It's like, there's nothing there.
yeah, exactly. I saw, I think it was on NBC. That little 10-year-old boy in, like, San Antonio or somewhere in Texas.
Yeah.
His mom invested. He's 10 years old, and his mom basically bought him stocks in GameStop, like, before all of this.
Oh, so now he
made, like, $3,200.
Wow.
American, which is, like, what is that, like,
That's a good amount, like, from just having stocks. Like, he didn't even have to do anything, really, like, not from working.
Passive income.
That's
gross. Exactly. So shout out to that kid and his mom.
Yeah. Okay, I just realized how I was explaining the analogy wrong to the stock market. So you know how I said that you have the library book that you, it doesn't belong to you, but you sell it for $10?
Yeah.
What a hedge fund manager would have is, like, he would have a stock that he bought, or that's not his stock, sorry. So he would have it to be traded on other person's behalf, and he would sell it for $10 with the hope that he could buy another stock to replace that stock for a less price than $10.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So he would end up profiting, and he would profit by a lot, because instead of $10, it's like $1 million, right?
Yeah. But
when the price of the stock he was hoping to replace it with goes up, he makes a loss, because he still has to replace the stock, but he can no longer buy it for less of a price that he originally sold it for.
That's wow. That is interesting. Yeah. That's just like the little ways to sort of like manipulate capitalism to give yourself a monopoly, basically, you know?
Yeah. And it just seems like, why is it that this is a completely acceptable thing for hedge fund managers to do? But then when the ordinary person does it, it's all of a sudden like a big deal and, oh my God, it's a crime. And like they're manipulating the stock market and blah, blah, blah. But
Raji, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why is it so socially unacceptable? This is just like a random example, but why is it so socially unacceptable and frowned upon, for example, to sell drugs? And yet,
yeah,
somehow even the media seems to just completely allow these uber rich billionaires to continue to just keep profiting and manipulating the system just because it's within our code of bias.
It's the difference between someone who sells crack or someone who uses crack or weed versus someone who uses cocaine. Like the use of drugs like crack and weed are associated with like lower class and minority groups. But crack is, I mean, sorry, not crack. Cocaine is the rich people's drug. And the rich people are the ones in power who are allowing cocaine to enter the country through corruption in the border patrol and everything. So why are they going to blow the whistle on their own people? Yeah. It just doesn't make sense. It makes more sense to shift the blame onto minority groups so you can unfairly target them instead of addressing the systemic issues that cause them to resort to using drugs in the first place. I mean, this kind of went off topic, but it's like the same, it's the same principle, you know?
Like, let me just put it this way. Like, I feel like every gang in America, every like minority gang in America combined has probably done like half the damage that five billionaires could do just with all the environmental stuff and everything.
I've been watching a few documentaries about, drug lords and, excuse me, and one about the crack epidemic in New York. And what you realize after watching these documentaries is that people don't join gangs just for the fun of it. People join gangs because they feel like their voice is not being heard by the government. They feel like the government doesn't care about their interests or that the government doesn't care what happens to them. So why would they rely on the government for protection when they know that the guy who sells drugs in their neighborhood can provide for them and can buy their kids food and buy their kids clothes and send them to school? When the government won't do any of that. And so if the country wants to get rid of gangs and drugs and those type of problems, they have to look to the root level and address those systemic issues that prevent people from getting opportunities. You can't just make the blanket solution be, okay, criminalize drug users and criminalize dealers and send them to jail and give them the hardest penalty, because that just makes people more likely to reoffend. And it doesn't do anything for the real problem.
No, I completely agree. Like, personally, I went to a high school in like a sort of, I guess you'd call it like a gang activated zone in Toronto.
Yeah.
So like a large amount of my good friends from high school are currently in jail for drug offenses or just came out or are like pending cases or whatever.
Yeah.
So I've seen it firsthand. Like I've just seen it. And
yeah,
I can objectively say that they're worse people than the people running the GameStop hedge fund. You know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly. They're just ordinary people who have had to make questionable decisions because they've been in hard circumstances.
Exactly.
No one decides to do crack because, oh, let me just do it for the fun of it. No one decides to sell illegal substances because they feel like they're above the law and they're bad and whatever. It's not about that. It's about making a decision to provide for your family or to provide for yourself and to try and get yourself ahead when you're denied the opportunities that other people have.
I completely agree, Rajan. I couldn't agree more.
Sorry, I got really heated about this because it just made me angry. It really made me angry to watch that documentary.
See, guys, this is what makes our podcast radio show different from CNN, different from NBC. This is this is the real raw emotion of two Laurier students. We're really giving you our opinion. We ain't experts on everything. But, we get
to the heart of the issues.
Exactly. We give our opinion, and I hope you guys appreciate it. Let's just wrap up quickly with this sort of issue going on in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. So I'll just give a really quick rundown. So there's essentially been a military coup in Myanmar. And for those of you who don't know, Myanmar was run through a military dictatorship for like half a century up until 2011.
Yep.
And that same military is essentially taking power again. I think it was yesterday.
And they imprisoned the leader, Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, so.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. So, quickly, so they've closed banks across the nation, the military. They've cut off the internet and the phone lines in many of the big cities.
Wow.
The power in the country, as you mentioned, has been taken from, how did you say it? Aung San Suu Kyi?
Suu Kyi, yeah.
Suu Kyi?
Yeah.
So it's been handed, she's been detained, and power has been handed to General Min Aung Hlaing. Please forgive my terrible pronunciation. And so the coup is apparently a response to an alleged election fraud, kind of like the states.
Wow.
Obviously, I'm pretty sure it's essentially baseless.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of an excuse for them to get back into power.
Yeah.
And the really interesting, there's two interesting things about the story I want to talk about. The first one is the Joe Biden administration has basically said that they're going to take action mm-hmm. if the coup isn't overturned. Like if he isn't put back in power, the U.S. is going to take action. So I don't know if that's military, economic, whatever. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see that. And the second thing that I found really, really fascinating. So, Suu Kyi, that's how you say it, right? Suu Kyi.
Mm-hmm.
So, Suu Kyi, for those of you who don't know, won a Nobel Peace Prize back in, I think it was 93 or 94. And this is a crazy thing. She was in house arrest in Myanmar from 1989 until 2011.
Wow.
She was on house arrest for how many years is that?
We're complaining about a 2-week quarantine period.
Yeah, this woman was literally on house arrest for multiple decades.
Yeah.
So, anyways, she has a long history of like great human rights records and just being. She won the Nobel Peace Prize, which is obviously an amazing honor. The crazy thing is when she finally came into power, I think it was in 2011, everything was basically good until I think it was 2016, around then,
mm-hmm.
where I don't know if you heard about this, but the Rohingya issue.
Yeah, Rohingya Muslims.
Yeah,
I heard Rohingya that she revoked her peace prize because she didn't stop, like, the expulsion.
Yeah, she's literally on the record calling them terrorists wow. and refusing to renounce basically genocide that's going on in there.
Yeah.
And yeah,
that was a big controversy.
I don't know. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Ethiopia
mm-hmm.
and how their prime minister had yeah. won the Nobel Prize and then the next year he's going on like a terrible like ethnic sort of cleansing kind of thing?
Oh, I actually didn't hear about that part.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I must have, maybe that was one of my individual reports, but yeah, basically, really quickly, it's the exact same situation. He won a Nobel Peace Prize, the mm-hmm. Prime Minister or President of Ethiopia.
Yeah.
And then, like, a year or 2 years later, he's in the midst of an extremely bloody conflict.
Oh, okay.
So this is kind of the same with what's going on in Myanmar. I just mm-hmm. didn't know too much. I thought I'd just highlight that for people who are, like, assuming that it's, like, bad taking out the good, when in actuality it's more like bad taking out the lesser bad, you know?
Yeah, it's never really black and white in these type of situations, is it? Because on yeah. one hand the person has done a lot for the country in general, but then they have some kind of like suspicious incidents in their past too, and so it's like, what do you have to support? Because at the end of the day, like, wouldn't you most people would pick the one that hurts the least people.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be some kind of controversy about these type of things.
Yeah, I just find it so crazy, this whole situation.
Yeah.
But I think we're running out of time, Rajni. I think we're getting time to wrap it up.
30 seconds left, so you can close off for us.
Okay, guys, so thank you, everyone, for listening to the world's greatest podcast featuring myself, Jeffrey, and my lovely co-host, Rajni. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us ramble. We will catch you next week at Laurier News at Noon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye.